Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment. Master Commissioner Robert Baer presiding.
Please be seated. We have a number of cases to be argued this morning, and we have no fewer than three Master Commissioners, so our procedure will be that I will hear the consolidated argument in the first two cases. We will then take a 10-minute recess. Master Commissioner O'Rourke will hear the next case, after which there will be another recess, and then Master Commissioner Mendoza will hear the final two cases. The first cases for argument this morning are numbers 2016-902 and number 2017-792. The cases have been consolidated for purposes of argument, and both the property owner is the appellant. Mr. Sleggs, if you'd please present your argument.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Todd Sleggs, and I represent the appellant GC Net Lease Westerville Investors LLC in both appeals. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. These appeals for the tax years 2013 and 2014 involve the application of revised code 5713.03 as amended in 2012. While these two appeals have been pending, the court has decided the cases of Terraza 8, State Farm, and Buckeye Terminals, and we've either discussed those cases in our briefs or filed them as notices of additional authority with the court. This is a 388,669 square foot office building that has been the subject of three sales noted in the record. The first sale occurred on February 19th, 2010, and was a sale leaseback of the property. Later that same year, the property sold subject to that sale leaseback lease on October 22nd, 2010. And then it subsequently sold again in a sale giving rise to these appeals that took place on November 14th, 2013 as part of an 18 property portfolio sale. At the Board of Revision hearings, the sale information and fee simple appraisals were submitted, and the Board of Revision adopted the sale price for both years. In the 2013 tax year case, they noted in their decision that they were adopting the sale for purposes of consistency. And in the 2014 year decision, they acknowledged that it was an 18 asset sale and that the allocated value was based upon the lease. When these cases were appealed to the Board of Tax Appeals, the Board of Tax Appeals did not review the appraisal evidence and testimony, since they found that a recent arm's length sale did not require them to make an inquiry into the encumbrances in place at the time of the sale. And we believe this is contrary to the language in 5713.03 as amended, as well as the court's opinion in Terraza 8.
Let me ask you about that, because your briefs in these cases ask for a reverse and adopting the appraisal value. Isn't the proper approach at this point under the new case law to vacate the decision, remand to the BTA so that it can make the fact finding?
Yes, and I think along that same line, I did file the Bronx case, which was recently decided as a notice of additional authority, that no new evidence be submitted on remand, because the parties had opportunities at the Board of Revision and also the Board of Tax Appeals. We did put the Board of Education's appraiser through the property prior to the 2014 Board of Revision hearing. So in this particular case, the Board of Tax Appeals decisions are very clear that they did not consider the appraisal evidence. In the 2013 case, they say, quote, "We will not consider Coon's appraisal report because it's only when the purchase price does not reflect the true value that a review of independent appraisals is appropriate." And in the 14 case, very similar language, "We will not consider Coon's appraisal report." So This case is a mirror of the Terrazza case where the Board of Tax Appeals, based upon their interpretation of 5713.03 as amended, did not reach a review of the appraisal testimony. I would just briefly touch on the appraisal testimony in the case from the standpoint that the property, when it sold, was 100% occupied, and Mr. Kuhn testified that as of January 1 of 2013, that the market occupancy was 20%, and he considered that in his income approach as well as in making adjustments to his sale comparables. And then in 2014, it was his finding that market occupancy was 15%, and he used that in his income approach as well as making adjustments to his sale comparables.
In your briefs in this matter, you may have a second proposition of law that relates to the administrative rule. Doesn't Terrazza 8 put an end to that proposition?
Yeah, I mean, I will just say, as a practitioner, I find that the administrative code rules that are promulgated by the Tax Commissioner be instructive, and I agree that the court has basically held that that's not determinative in this case. But I do find that the Ohio Administrative Code rules are consistent with generally accepted appraisal practice. And what Mr. Kuhn did in this case was basically follow generally accepted appraisal practices in considering market occupancy and determining unencumbered fee simple value. So what we're requesting is that the Board of Tax Appeals decisions and orders in the case be reversed and remanded with instructions to determine the unencumbered fee simple value of the property based upon the appraisal evidence and testimony in the record. And I would note that in my conclusions in both of the cases, I did make an alternative request that the auditor's value be reinstated. And I would like to amend or withdraw that request. You know, when I went through the record preparing for oral argument today, it's clear that that 2010 sale was a leased fee sale. And it's clear to me that the Board of Revisions or the county auditor's initial values for 2013 and 2014 are the $35,500,000 sale price in that October 2010 leased fee sale. So I think based upon the evidence in the record, it would be inappropriate to default to what the record clearly shows was a leased fee sale.
Let me ask you, on the first case, the 2016-902, there was sort of a jurisdictional bobble there. There were two decisions of the BOR, two appeals. Does that have any effect on this court's review of the BTA decision?
It's not clear from the record. There was an 80-90 parcel on this, although the complaint just lists the main parcel. But I think in the county records, it's an 80-90 parcel. And I think what the Board of Revision did in the initial decision just put either the 80-90 amount in their BOR decision.
Could you explain for the court the 80, what you mean by
well,
the
80-90? If there's some kind of a TIF or an abatement, the counties all handle it differently, but what Franklin County does is they carry the different values on either a -80 or -90 ending number to the parcel. And so both of the Board of Revision, I think they caught their decision when they issued the corrected decision. And but obviously the appeal period had already run and we'd already appealed the earlier decision. So I think technically the case could be remanded back down to the Board of Revision, but they did issue a decision on the parcel. And so to me, there isn't an error in the decision. There might be an error in the valuation that they intended to put in the decision, but I don't think it impacts the jurisdiction of the Board of Tax Appeals to hear and determine the value of that parcel.
And then one other question. In the 2017 case, there's a problem that the BOR did not certify the audio, apparently, of the actual BOR hearing. Does that have any effect on the analysis of this appeal?
Well, as a regular practitioner, that seems to be a rampant problem around the state. We've got these very high-tech audio systems that seem to be not as reliable as the old cassette systems that we used when I first started practicing. We attempted, and when I say we, the parties, to alleviate that by having a hearing before the Board of Tax Appeals where we had Mr. Kuhn testify again. It's not a perfect situation. The court's left with really just the journal entries that I referenced by the Board of Revision. Their oral decision is in the recording, but the hearing has been lost, and I think that's unfortunate, but I think that the parties have remedied that as best we can. I mean, there's no way to go back and recreate the audio, but I do feel that the parties cooperated in resubmitting the case essentially to the Board of Tax Appeals.
And in the second case, the Board of Revision's decision was to adopt the $40 million valuation.
That's correct.
The sale price valuation.
That's correct.
It didn't base it on the appraisal or anything like that.
No, but they did, you know, their discussion of the transaction was a little bit more detailed. They acknowledged that it was an 18-asset sale. This is in the supplement at page 26. And that the allocated value was based upon the lease. Mm-hmm. And if you look at page 160 in the supplement, you can see that the $44,500,000 is shown there, and then they note the lease amount, and they just, I think for purposes of reporting, they calculate the implied cap rate. But what I thought was more interesting, if you look at the supplement on page 218, it says the allocation was for the purchase agreement only, and it wasn't otherwise binding upon the seller or the purchaser. So I think in this particular case, based upon the fact that we had a multi-property portfolio sale subject to a lease that was entered into as part of a sale-leaseback transaction, that it would have been prudent for the Board of Tax Appeals to consider the appraisal evidence in the case in deciding the value. I think I've covered everything. At this point, I'd like to reserve whatever time I have left for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Slade.
Thank you.
Ms. Fox.
Hi, thank you. I am Carol Fox here on behalf of the Westerville City Schools Board of Education. I would like to, first of all, set forth that it is our position that the Board of Tax Appeals did properly apply the standards set forth by the court in Terraza in these decisions. The distinction in these cases from Terraza is that the Board of Tax Appeals did discuss the actual lease in place and did find that the property owner's appraiser, Mr. Kuhn, determined a market lease rate of a value higher than what the actual lease was. I believe Mr. Kuhn's lease rate was $8.50 a square foot, and the actual lease rate in place was $8.12 a square foot at that time.
But don't the BTA decisions say basically, they cite the case law under the Berea rule, and they basically say we just shouldn't be looking at the appraisal. And they actually, don't they in both decisions cite the HIN case's pronouncement that we would never make an adjustment of sale price for the encumbrances?
They do cite to a case law that is based on the Berea case. I absolutely agree with that. However, with regard to the appraisal evidence, they rely on Pingway. And Pingway was pre-Berea. That was a decision that was based upon Ratner, and that is the law that this court said now applies under the amended statute. So in looking as to whether or not the appraisal should be considered or to what weight it should be given, we believe that the Board of Tax Appeals applied absolutely the proper standard and the proper law, even after the amendments. Even prior to Berea, the court had severely limited when an appraisal should be relied upon, looking at Park Investments and Canalco, and Pingway, as already discussed. Those were very strict exceptions as to when an appraisal should be relied upon when there is an unrefuted arm's-length sale, such as we have in this case. And those cases all came out prior to Berea. Those cases should all still apply based on the court's decision in Terraza. The court made it clear in Terraza that the burdens with respect to an arm's-length sale had not changed, that it's the property owner's burden to refute the presumption that the sale is the best evidence of value. In this case, nobody with any personal knowledge ever came forward. We had no testimony from anybody from the owner. And Mr. Kuhn hadn't even discussed the sale with any owner or any owner's representative. Any information that was within his report or his testimony regarding the sale, quite frankly, including the fact that it may or may not have been a multi-property sale, was hearsay, was objected to, and it would have been improper for the Board of Tax Appeals to rely on that hearsay testimony. So in this case, we're asking this board to apply the law that already exists to affirm the Board of Tax Appeals because they properly applied the law with regard to when an appraisal should be considered. Also, they did, although they cited the law that you referenced, they did also acknowledge and specifically say, in at least the 2014 case, that the appraiser's opinion of market rent supported the fact that this actual rent in place was at market. So they found additional support for that there. We understand that
there's no dispute on this record that there's like the 15-year lease and that J.P. Morgan Chase is the tenant.
Well, there is some dispute. Again, the lease was not properly put into record. There was nobody who came forward to testify, to identify the lease. Any information in this case about the lease or about the sale constitutes hearsay and was objected to at the Board of Revision by counsel for the owner. I'm sorry, counsel for the Board of Education. And because of that, because the lease was a market lease, we believe that Terraza doesn't apply. We believe that there is no basis for overturning the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals. The appellant is relying on something more. He's asking this court to take it even a further step. Okay, if it sells and it's leased, we should disregard it, even if it's a market rate lease, because maybe the occupancy is different. Well, where do we stop? Where does the line get drawn? If we're going to have to look at every detail, whether it's cap rate or occupancy or the actual market lease rate, there will be no valid sale of a leased property, and that would violate the uniform rule, because then this court is saying we can apply a sale to a vacant property or to an owner-occupied property, but we cannot apply a sale to a property that is leased or income-producing.
But what I hear counsel saying this morning is that this is a question of remanding it to the BTA to make sure that the appraisal is fully considered under this later case law. That would just be a factual determination in this case of the relationship between the encumbrance and the sale price and the property value.
Potentially. I do understand that. And if the court is going to hold that way, it would, of course, be our position that there has been a new legal standard set under Terraza and that, therefore, all parties should have an opportunity to present additional evidence. If that's not going to happen, then we would encourage the BTA and this court to consider the fact that, again, if a sale is going to be refuted as being the best evidence of value, which is still the presumption under Terraza, then what is required to refute that sale? It can't simply be an appraiser who has no knowledge about what went down. It has to be somebody who has personal knowledge that they can not only say the lease in place was at, above, or below market, but also the second part, which is crucial, that lease in place affected the sale price. We have no such person here. We have no evidence here that the lease in place was either different from the market or that it, more importantly, affected the sale price that was negotiated at arm's length. That's never been disputed.
But can't counsel on the other side simply say the mere fact that we've presented an appraisal to some degree presents some evidence
And we say that's not enough. Even pre-Berea, that was not enough. And since the amendments, this court held in Buckeye Hospitality that that was not enough. Simply the fact that an appraiser has opined to a different value than the sale price is not enough. And the reason is appraisal work is subjective. That's why it's less reliable than a sale. You can find an appraiser that will have a very different value from any other appraiser because every step of the appraisal process is subjective. Which comparables do you use? How do you adjust those comparables? Do you go to the high end or the low end? What cap rate do you choose? What vacancy rate do you choose? Mr. Kuhn arrived at his vacancy rate using multi-tenant properties. This is a single-tenant property. In the criteria or the data that he relied upon, it excluded single-tenant properties. So the reliability of his data doesn't even apply to this property, and that is the problem. When we go down this path and this slippery slope of allowing simply the presentation of an appraisal to refute any sale that happens to be of leased property, it becomes very, very risky. And if the law prior to Berea applies, we're saying that the Board of Tax Appeals properly applied that law here. They relied upon Pingway, which relied upon Ratner. There's also, again, Canalco, Buckeye Hospitality. It is not simply enough to say this appraiser thinks that the value is different. For those reasons, we would request that the Board of Tax Appeals decisions be affirmed in these cases. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fox. Mr. Sleggs, you've reserved 2 minutes and 32 seconds.
Thank you. The lease rate is only part of the components that make up unencumbered fee simple value. And Mr. Kuhn's testimony is clear that the difference in his opinion between the leased fee value in this case and his appraisal is occupancy. And so I think that that is something that the Board of Tax Appeals should have considered in determining value in this case, is that properties sell with varying occupancies, and I think it's an appropriate area of inquiry under Revised Code 5713.03 as amended. Now, if the Board of Tax Appeals disagreed with Mr. Kuhn's appraisal, they could have submitted their own appraisal. I mean, that's what we do in these cases, is we get appraisers to advise us on these. And I don't think that market rent or occupancy is something that a lay person, a buyer or seller, could necessarily opine to. These are institutional purchasers that may or may not have ever even seen this property. And I think that in this particular case, the appellant appropriately relied on a local expert to advise them of what the market rent, what market occupancy was, and that's really what led the appellant to contest the use of the sale for assessment purposes. And so for these reasons, we would respectfully request that the court remand both of these cases to the Board of Tax Appeals with instructions to determine the unencumbered fee simple value of the real estate based upon the appraisal evidence in the record. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sleggs. This case, or these two cases, will be submitted and the court will advise the parties of its decisions. We'll now take a 10-minute recess.
All rise.